In our gospel this morning, we hear James and John go up to Jesus and they ask him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask you." I can only imagine how my parents would respond if I went up to them and asked them that. I think I'd just get a dirty look and they'd walk away. But what we see here is James and John's ambition at work. You know, they're vying for the highest seats in the kingdom of heaven, to sit at Christ's left and right hand. And Christ doesn't just shoot them down right out, but he redirects them in a different direction. And I think there's an important lesson within this that we can see this morning. Because a lot of times when people follow Christ, they do so out of mixed motives or sometimes out of selfish reasons. You know, some people go to Mass because they want to go to heaven. They're like, "Hey, that sounds real good. You know, eternal happiness, I get whatever I want for all eternity. Go to Mass every Sunday, I think I'll do that." Or, "Well, I don't want to go to hell, so, you know, maybe I should be going to Mass every Sunday." You know, just straight up reward. You know, sometimes people go to Mass because they're seeking to please other people. They go just because they know their parents want them to go. Or they might go because they think it'll impress their girlfriend if they go to Mass. You know, or sometimes people go to church seeking the esteem of others. They want other people to see how holy they are. So sometimes, you know, people have mixed or sometimes selfish motives for the practice of the faith. It's about what they can get for themselves. Just like James and John are trying to get something for themselves. And a lot of times that can be a starting point. You know, sometimes a desire to go to heaven or a fear of hell can be the beginning of somebody entering into the spiritual life or entering into the faith. But it shouldn't be the end point. You know, if that's our end point, if that's the only place we go in the faith, then there's something lacking. And so when Christ hears James and John ask for these seats in the kingdom of heaven, what Christ says to him, he says, "Can you drink the cup that I will drink? Can you be baptized with the baptism with which I'll be baptized?" What's he talking about? And that becomes more clear as we go forward in the gospel and we get to the Garden of Gethsemane, where Christ begins his passion, the agony in the garden. He takes the sins of the world upon himself and he says, "Father, take this cup from me, but not my will, but your will be done." And so the cup is the suffering that he's going to endure. And the baptism is going to be his death that he's going to endure. So what Christ is saying to James and John, to his two disciples here, is he's saying, "You want a spot in the kingdom of heaven. Are you willing to suffer with me? Is your friendship with me deep enough that you'll follow me where I'm going? Will you follow me to the cross?" And I think that's an important element of a friendship. You know, in any friendship that we have, but most especially with a friendship with God, are we doing it for selfish reasons? Or are we willing to stand by a person because our friendship with them is deep enough that even if they're undergoing suffering, we'll go there with them? How deep is our friendship? Will we be willing to follow Christ even if it entails suffering? And James and John say yes. We can drink the cup. And they probably don't know what they're saying at that moment. They probably don't understand, you know, what the Lord is saying to them, but they will eventually. They'll get to that point. I once knew a person who was raised Catholic and they rejected the faith. They left the practice of the faith. And the issue was suffering. You know, they couldn't reconcile the God of Christianity, a loving God, with Jesus Christ on the cross. How could a loving God allow that? And they couldn't reconcile their own suffering that they had experienced in their life. You know, how could God allow me to suffer like this? Therefore, they rejected the faith. And they couldn't reconcile loving God with the other suffering that they saw in the world as well. And I think that's a valid point. I mean, that's a very difficult and challenging question to deal with. But I think a few points are helpful. And first is to recognize that when God created this world, suffering wasn't part of the original plan. When God created the first man and the first woman, there was no suffering. There was no pain. there was no death. There was no disorder. Everything was ordered properly. That's the world that God created us in. And what God desires for us in eternity, he desires all of us to attain salvation. And if we follow his will and if we do attain salvation, we will be in a place where there is no suffering for all eternity, where every tear will be wiped away. And so suffering is not part of God's plan. It's not like he's up there wanting us to suffer and inflicting pain on us because he enjoys it. Suffering only becomes important after the fall, after Adam and Eve disobeyed God. And the reason why it became important is because when Adam and Eve sinned, they sinned through selfishness. They committed an act that they knew was defying the will of God in order to fulfill their own selfish desires. And so the remedy for that is self-sacrifice. You know, selfishness is reversed by self-sacrifice. Adam and Eve sinned out of selfishness, and in order to put things right, we need to learn to sacrifice for the good of those that we care about. You know, are we willing to put the needs of another person above our own needs, even when it costs us something? And so sacrifice in this fallen world teaches us how to be selfless, how to love another person, not for selfish purposes, but for selfless reasons. And so sacrifice becomes a remedy for the selfishness within us. And ultimately, humanity's greatness is shown through sacrifice. You know, if we think of a couple examples, when the planes crashed into the World Trade Centers on September 11th, and the buildings were in flames, there were firefighters who went into those buildings knowing that they were risking their lives in order to help the victims. And they had to make a choice that they were willing to tend to the needs of those people in need and go to the victims and try to help them, even though they knew that they were risking their lives. They had to make a choice that their love for their neighbor was greater than their own lives. And ultimately, it did cost them their lives when the towers came down, and many of those firefighters were killed. But it was an act of sacrifice. That's where the greatness of human nature is shown. Or if we think of a priest like Father Damien Malachi, now a canonized saint, he voluntarily agreed to go to a leper colony on one of the islands of Hawaii. He volunteered for that. And he knew that he would probably ultimately contract the disease, and he did contract leprosy. But ultimately, that's when his ministry really took off with the lepers, when he could stand up there and preach as a leper, sharing the suffering of the people he was ministering to. He volunteered for that. He didn't have to go there, but he desired to do that in order to bring Christ's love to these people who were so broken. The greatness of humanity is shown through suffering. And that applies to parents who make sacrifices for their children, or volunteers who make sacrifice for the needy in their community. You know, the greatness of human nature is shown through sacrifice. And so suffering is necessary in our fallen world. We need suffering in order to purify us of the selfishness that affects all of us because of the fall. But, you know, Christ, he can't take away our suffering because it's necessary. But he doesn't allow us to suffer alone. As we hear in the second letter to the Hebrews, it says we have a great high priest who is able to sympathize with us because he has been tested in every way. You know, we have a God who cares about us so deeply that even though suffering is necessary for our purification, he will come to us, and he was the first to embrace suffering and to suffer with us. That's the God that we serve, a God who desires to suffer with us, even though he can't just remove all of our suffering. So it's only through the lens of wisdom that we see the value of suffering. But as we're here at Mass this morning, as followers of Christ, I think it's important for us to ask the question, are we following Christ just for our own self-interest, just so that we can get something out of it? Or is our friendship with our Lord deep enough that we're willing to drink the cup that he drinks and accept the suffering and the crosses he hands to us each day, sacrificing for our families, for our friends, and ultimately for God, knowing that it's through suffering that our love of God and love of neighbor is purified.